everybody. Notes up. Give everyone another moment to get settled. Okay. Welcome. So glad to be with all of you today. Later this afternoon, a new cycle of Sacred Depths is starting, and I was just thinking about how quickly the time has gone already since we all started together. I can't believe we're already more than halfway through the program. So today is the first of three sessions on befriending your fear. And really, in some ways, it's a continuation of so much of what we started last week as well with looking at resistance and the resistance archetypes. And I'd love to hear what's been resonating for you since last week. How have you been playing with the resistance archetypes for yourself or with clients? What have you been noticing? What's been percolating around resistance? AJ.
Hi. I know I left it really rough last week, and I was having a lot of feelings. And I talked to a couple people. I brought it to therapy, and really just wanted to come on and say thank you for that space. And the care around it, it felt, in retrospect, it felt it felt very easing. Even, in the moment, it was hard stuff. So, thank you.
Of course, and thank you for all that you brought forward. And, I told you privately I could feel the discomfort. And as from a practitioner point of view, it's like, for those of us that are loving and caring, maybe we're like, oh, I don't want her to feel uncomfortable, or but the truth is that the discomfort, the right amount of tension and safety is what can create new awarenesses and new directions. And tell me if I'm getting this right, AJ. I could feel that's where you were at. Like, we both wanted you to maybe move through the discomfort more quickly than you were. But the truth is that my intuitive sense was that, like, something important was happening there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I needed to sit with it. I wasn't ready to move through it. And if I had, it would have been pretend, and it would have been like heightening and locking in that judge versus, digging a little bit about what was actually going on.
What was coming up there? Yes, I really want to acknowledge you for not skating over it, for not pretending or just like quick, let me move on, and for sitting with it and being with it. It's a big deal to be able to do that, and I'm so glad that you did.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sophie.
Hey, one thing that was kept coming up for me as I was listening to the resistance archetypes, because I listened to the recording, it was amazing. But one thing that kept coming up for me was, wow, I'd have to be really bold to ask these.
Oh, we just lost you, or I just lost you. Did your sound go off?
Sorry, I think I swished my screen and it muted me. Sorry. Yeah, I'd have to be very bold, very courageous, very kind of strong and centered in myself to ask the kind of questions that you were modeling, as in like if the judge was in a client situation and I could feel it coming at me, the amount of holding I'd have to do of myself to be able to bring, like, I can't even think right now of the question of some of the examples, because I guess it's just quite far away from the usual kind of bold energy I'd bring to my sessions, which is sort of helping them see maybe blind spots in their marketing, and it stays very cerebral and it isn't focused so much on the inner work. And I can just feel that it's a really big growth edge for me to have the courage to see something, speak to it. It's, yeah, so I thought I'd name that in case other people in the group are thinking that. And yeah, it's just, it's, I get a bit shaky when I think of it.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're naming that, and the courage piece. And if this is helpful, a couple pieces with a reframe. So I heard you say once or twice that it like has, I think you said it has to take a lot of work or has to take a lot of energy. And what I want to open up is that there's a difference between courage and it's taking a lot out of me. My experience is that a lot of work that it takes is actually the inner, not in that moment, although of course it does take a certain holding, but it's more the continually coming back to the equal playing field. I am whole and complete. My client is whole and complete. We are not at odds with each other. There, right? It's just resistance is coming up. This is natural and normal. And when I can continue to come back to that, and most importantly, know that I'm okay and my client is okay, and then bring love for all of it in, and the heart of the word that you used, or the root of the word that you used, courage, comes from the French word for heart, right? So so much of, for me at least in my experience, the courage comes from the softening of my heart in that moment, both to myself and to my client.
Yeah.
How does that?
I can really feel that. Yeah, that feels great. And to every time you said, normalize it, this is normal, resistance is part of growth. I was like, oh yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. It's part of my growth, so it's going to be part of their growth. I guess it put the spotlight on my people pleaser. I just don't want to make anyone uncomfortable ever. And I know I'm not making them uncomfortable, but yeah, it's that, it's it helped me see that that's something for me to work on to make progress as a coach. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. And again, and I've said it a few times, and I'll find also some kind of easy reading on this if anybody is interested in going further. But neurobiology research shows us that growth happens when there is some discomfort and tension within a safe container or a safe enough container.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, so we're going to take all of that from last week and we're going to bring it into our work for today, which is starting to look at fear itself. And as a reminder, we want to look at this entire kind of bigger overarching module as a whole, which started last week, really started with energetics too, the week before. We want to kind of look at it, all of this as a whole, all the pieces fitting together. So for example, last week, when we looked at the resistance archetypes, we looked at the types of obstacles that can bring the coaching itself to a halt. Last week's class was about supporting your client to move out of the unconscious hold of the archetype, that need to sabotage the forward movement, but not thinking, not realizing that that's what's going on. And what we looked at last week was really about moving all of that towards compassion and love and understanding for it, for the client and for ourselves. Last week was about how to start to get the green light to even look at the fear that is wrapped, you know, that is kind of underneath the resistance. And then once you've poked holes in the resistance, you can look at the fear. And so that's what we're really going to be looking at over these next weeks. Ways, techniques for supporting ourselves and our clients to befriend our fears. Going deeper into dismantling that fear that the resistance archetype was trying so desperately to hide. And you can do this either by befriending the fear directly or by befriending the resistance archetype. Because as you befriend more the resistance archetype, you'll befriend the fear along with it. So we're gonna be learning how to do all of that over the next couple of sessions. All that being said, sometimes the process doesn't even end there. Sometimes once we befriend the fear, we find that there are unhelpful thought patterns that are underneath the fear or hanging out with the fear. And so that's why after this module, we're going to look at rewiring negative thought patterns. We can be supporting our clients to be taking outer action along the way as we peel the layers. So it's not like all the inner work has to be done and complete, because I don't know about you, my inner work is still not complete. We can be strategizing and taking action along the way. And the idea with all of this, there are a couple of pieces, and pieces that we've touched on before in this program, but again, just to like highlight them, underscore them. Number one, process is, change is a process. Most of the time, even when it doesn't look like it's a process, even when there's like a big aha moment and then like massive action is taken after that, usually there was a series of awarenesses, you know, either undercover or not, that were like making their way to get that, you know, domino effect. But you know, all that being said, as we know, change is a process. It's not a once and done. It's not linear. It can be cyclical as well. And what is helpful for me is to think about supporting myself, supporting clients, to do the inner work, to create the breakthroughs, to create the awarenesses, enough of an opening that there's inspiration, permission to take next steps. But that doesn't mean that we're also going to come back to do the next level of inner work as needed. All right, so that's where we're going with all of this. Okay. So we're going to be looking at what I call befriending your fear. Today, we're going to get the foundational principles behind this, kind of look at the human nature behind this. And then in our next session, I'll take you through the process. And then in our next session after that, we'll have some modeling and demos with the process. So I developed the term befriend your fear many, many, many years ago after many encounters and experiences with both my own fear as well as that of my clients. And this idea, this concept of befriending your fear is not only my own. I've since then seen it in many different ways, which I love. It's like, you know, like ideas come in waves and in different ways. But this concept is for sure 15 years ago was very different than how most people were talking about fear. And I would say even today, it's still pretty different than most of what we see both in the industry as well as in culture in general around fear. We tend to get the messages that we tend to get about fear tend to be conquer your fear, slay your fear, destroy your fear, or even let your fears go. And befriending your fear is actually not about even letting your fears go. You know, this is about becoming friends. It's a totally different concept than slaying, conquering, destroying, or even letting go. Or even overcoming in a way, though, like we could also look at it as overcoming. We want to befriend our fears because if we ignore, avoid, criticize, hate on, fight, or try to destroy the fears, most of the time they become stronger and bigger, not smaller and more workable. So I always love to share the story, this little story that I saw. I watched a lot of Sesame Street when I was little. And one of the little cartoons that they had on Sesame Street, and I still remember this from when I was probably 4 or 5 years old, was a parable of the sun and the wind. And in this parable, the sun and the wind were hanging out, and they saw a man with a big trench coat and a hat walking down the street. And the wind says to the sun, "Hey, sun, I bet you I'm stronger and more powerful than you are. I bet you I can get that coat and that hat off the man way quicker than you can." And the sun says, "I'm up for the challenge. I'm game here. It's on. Let's see." And the wind goes first, and the wind blows and blows and blows and uses its force to try to get that coat and that hat off of the man. But what happens? The coat and the hat don't fly off the man from the force of the wind, from the pushing of the wind. The opposite happens. The man clings tightly onto his coat and his hat, holding on to it, clinging to it. So then it's the sun's turn to go. And the sun doesn't use force. The sun just shines lovingly on the man. And just shines lovingly on the man and brings its heat and its warmth to just shine lovingly on the man. And the man, on his own avail, gets warm enough that he decides to take his hat and his coat off. To me, this is such a beautiful parable or metaphor for so many different things. And I think especially when it comes to fear and resistance. When we try to push it off, when we try to shame it off, when we try to fight it off, when we try to hell yeah it off, usually we end up clinging more tightly. But when we shine love and warmth and friendship onto it, then more choices show up. So let me pause there. I see some of you in the chat were Sesame Street watchers as well. Anything that you want to just share or add to this idea of befriending versus conquering, destroying or slaying, or anything that's feeling important that wants to be shared around that? Yeah, Melissa's saying, I wish my parents had seen this episode. Ayana.
Yeah, I just want to say that in meditation this morning, I was feeling really distracted by some thoughts. And so I decided to, I'd read years ago that in Tantra, one of the things they do is they take the distraction and make that part of the practice. And I'd remember that. So I did that. And it was so much easier than fighting it and trying to make it go away.
I love that. Make the distraction part of the meditation. Embrace it. Embrace it. Thanks for sharing that. That's great. Marianne, did you want to share something?
Yeah, I'm noticing how the list of words you used were like conquer it, slay it, destroy it. And then there were a few less kind of vehement ones like let it go or overcome it. But they're so like masculine too, that like aggressive. Yeah. And I noticed this culturally, some of you may have noticed this as well. I'm always noticing words that we use even as coaches, like the word trigger or blow things up. There's so many like warmongery type of things in the American vernacular that are actually kind of shocking and disturbing if you really start to notice it. But it was interesting that a bunch of those words of how that's kind of how we're conditioned to approach things, right? Like if you're going to quit something, people are like, you have to go cold turkey or go on a like extreme diet. Everything's so extreme and harsh. But I love this idea of just flipping it, because, you know, it's just a whole different energy of like receiving the message that your fear maybe has to give you, or being in community with your fear. When I think of the word befriend, I'm thinking like, how can I commune with this fear and learn something? Or how could I translate that into the glass being half full somehow, instead of having it be like an arduous uphill like struggle? It sort of takes the struggle piece out of it, and it's such a beautiful kind. And I love the sun and the wind. It is a really beautiful metaphor, kind of something similar. Are you going to like effort really hard and create more struggle and create a downward spiral? Or do you want to just like take a breath and like feel the, I can take my hat off now, you know? It's a beautiful contrast. And I think just talking it through, it's evident that, you know, as a coach, I can sit back and like look at a concept like this. But when I look at like what happens in our culture and life in general, it's the opposite of what works. It's our knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, 100%. I was getting chills when you were talking about language, a big, big yes to everything that you just said. And then kind of to pull on one of a big part of the spirit of what you just said, this work, and also so much of what we're gonna continue to be looking at in sacred depths, part of it is undoing the messaging of patriarchal culture. Like that, to me, that's actually one of the roles of a coach or a practitioner. I mean, one of the many roles or purposes is that so many of these messages that you just so beautifully shared, they've seeped into us. The language has seeped into us. Those concepts have seeped into us. We don't even realize that we've taken them on as this is truth. And the creating awareness around that and then offering different choices around that messaging, and that it doesn't have to be truth, I think is a big piece of the work that we do. Thanks for sharing all that.
Yeah, totally agree.
Kelly.
Yeah, just to piggyback on what Marianne was saying, and I was thinking that as well about the languaging just being so violent and aggressive. I was also thinking that, especially in this industry, that it's a way that people work a lot and they might actually get immediate results, but they aren't necessarily lasting results. And so, and I have had that experience myself of being like, yeah, I can push through and I can conquer this and overcome that. And I've done it. And then I like the retraction can be worse than where I was before. And I've witnessed that in other people as well. And often with very masculine presences in the front of the room. And then I was just reflecting even just with AJ at the end of the call last week, where I think a lot of us were sitting in discomfort like that. It was hard. I was like, I want it to be okay for her. I want Joanna to make it okay. I want to be okay. And you didn't try to fix it. Like you sat with her and like befriended her stuff that was coming up. And clearly we're sitting with your own too. And I was just reflecting on like how powerful it is to model those two things, because you could have done it really differently. And AJ might've been felt pressured to be like, yeah, sure. Okay. I'm all right. And then she wouldn't have been. Maybe instead of the last week, she would have actually had to kind of recover from that experience. It's like not, it's also not very trauma informed. So all of these pieces about like, what are the results that we actually want to help create? So
yes, yes to all of it. And, you know, life is full of paradox. And I'll also say, at least for me, there are right moments every now and again to push through. Like sometimes it is a, okay, this is, I'm just pushing through because I want to get that thing done. And, but if I'm doing it consciously and with intention, understanding the full picture too, right? So moments for everything. Okay, good. All right, so let's keep on going. What I'm going to say next is not going to be surprising, but it's just important to keep on bringing it to the forefront. One of the foundational pieces that we want to keep on coming back to when we're working with fear, with ourselves, with our clients, is that fear is normal. It is normal. It is 100% common, normal, and almost expected that fear of some sort is gonna show up when you're about to step into something bigger or different or stretchy for yourself. Fear is, for human beings, much of the time part of the process of expansion and growth. And there is nothing wrong with fear. If you experience fear when you are going after something that you want, or thinking about something that you, thinking about going after something that you want, if you experience fear, it doesn't mean that you can't have the thing that you want. It doesn't mean that there is anything wrong with you. It just means that there's fear and you are in the middle of a human process. The reason why I keep on coming back to this and highlighting this is because, again, cultural messaging, fear has been stigmatized and even pathologized in our culture, and oftentimes even in the transformational industry. But it is normal and healthy. It is healthy to experience fear sometimes. Then that's because our fear is there to protect us. Why does fear come up? It comes up to protect us. That's another foundational principle to write down. The fear comes up because either in that very moment, there is a real threat, or because at some point in our life, there was a real threat. Even if not in this moment, there is. And so the fear is a mechanism to protect us. In this way, I see fear as something to be respected. Because it's kind of like a smoke detector, right? We want to respect our smoke detectors because they let us know when we need to get out of the house. It's just that what can happen in a growth process is that the smoke detector needs to get more fine-tuned, or it's a little bit overly fine-tuned, we can say, and the smoke detector kind of goes off when it's just like some smoke from overcooking dinner versus a dangerous fire in the house that you need to get out of. Does that make sense? So part of our work is to support our clients to know when the smoke detector is going off because there's an actual fire in the house versus when the smoke detector is a little bit over vigilant and it's just the overcooked dinner. Fear isn't something to be fixed. It's not something to be fixed. Instead, it is something to be assessed. Is this helpful fear, or is this fear not helpful in this moment? Or in what ways is this helpful, and in what ways is this fear not helpful? And then make proper adjustments and reorientation around our decisions based on that assessment. Again, this is why we want to befriend fear versus destroy it. We don't want to take the smoke detector out and not have one in the house. That wouldn't be a very good idea. And for what it's worth, this is at least my experience. I think I said it earlier. I'm not really sure that fear ever goes away. And I'm not sure that it's supposed to. I think it's about continuing to deepen the relationship so that it can become more and more helpful versus being unhelpful. So let me ask you a couple of questions based on everything that we've been looking at so far. How have you, up until now, been approaching fear? Have you been seeing it as a problem? How have you been approaching it, and what have you been believing up until this moment about fear? Take a moment with that. List out all the different ways you've been approaching it, all the things you've been believing about it, either in yourself or in your clients. And think about cultural messaging that seeped in for you, parental messaging that seeped in for you around fear, coaching industry messaging that seeped in for you around fear? How have you been approaching? What have you been believing? I'd love to hear some shares. What is coming through? What are you seeing? What's feeling important around this discussion? Tina.
For many years now, I've been approaching fear from more of the inner child perspective. And you know, when it comes up for different reasons, I kind of just look at it from the perspective of, well, as far as the threat is concerned, that feels threatening in the moment, is it true?
Yes.
Is it true that I'm being threatened? And even if, and when it's not, and I'm still feeling that, you know, that anxiety or whatever that piece is that feels so out of whack, I just try to think of the last time I felt that way. And maybe it does go back to childhood, which it has and oftentimes does. And I kind of nurture the belief of that part of my child that believed that.
Yes.
And it's like this whole process that I do in my head, but I also do it for my clients.
Yeah, so beautifully said. I'm so glad you shared. And so this is another foundational piece that's really helpful to remember about fear. As I was saying earlier, sometimes the smoke detector goes off because there's a real threat. Sometimes the smoke detector goes off because in the past there was a real threat, and whatever is happening in the present is kind of bringing up that feeling from the past. And so as Tina's saying, it can be so helpful to support our clients to create awareness around which part of themselves is feeling the fear right now. Is it their present day adult self? Is it their 9-year-old self? Is it their 20-year-old, you know, whatever it is, which part is feeling the fear? And then to go further with that and support the clients to see the difference between the resources they have in the present moment versus the resources they had in the past, because that can support the client in saying, oh, that actually, like, I can deal with that fear. I can stretch through this fear. I have resources now that I didn't have then. Thanks, Tina. Angela.
Hi, Joanna. So let's see if I can put this, express that. So when you said about fear is not something to be fixed, I had a situation where I asked someone to be with their fear and feel that, and what wanted to say the message of that fear was. And it came, okay, want to be safe. And there was an idea of what it means to be safe in terms of everything was perfect and beautiful. So completely different from what you were saying about there's nothing to be fixed here. So I don't know if I have a question on that, but I don't know how to support in this way. And yeah, so any advice on that?
Yeah, in a couple minutes, we're actually going to talk about safety a little bit more, and I think that will help. And then if there's still questions, let me know, because we're going to kind of unpack some ideas around safety too. Good. Who else? What else is feeling important? What else are you seeing? What wants to be shared? Sophie's saying in the chat, when I meet fear in others, I find it so much easier to go slow, stay calm, and hold space with love. Yeah, as opposed to yourself. I hear you. Amy's saying, my deepest fear in my life has been death, so I try to get friendly with death. Yeah, that's a biggie. And AJ is saying that she feels the opposite of Sophie. With others, yeah. And AJ's also saying, I think I've also been projecting to my children the idea of healthy fear, which feels really super limiting to them. Can you share more on that? I don't think I'm getting it fully from the chat, but I feel like there's something important in there.
Yeah, like I'm wishing a little fear on them. Like, why aren't you scared of this?
Or... Oh, now I got it. Right. Yeah, it's right. It's an interesting thing. Because like I said earlier, fear is to be respected. Like, it is there to protect us. So having, like you're saying, now I get it, like having healthy fear, I mean, it's such an interesting question, right? Because we do want to have healthy fear, but then how do you do it with kids or adults in ways that it doesn't feel limiting and oppressing and scary? Annalise.
So, Joanna, it's quite a good coincidence that I just got a new client, and she is a partner in an American law firm here in London. She's very young. She's a mother of two, absolutely focused on her career, very. I had a little bit of a projection, but thank God I sort of like worked on that. And she wants to succeed. She's in a male dominated environment, and she works crazy hours. And her fear is that if she doesn't do that, she'll be found out. Sorry, there is a helicopter on my head. So basically imposter syndrome. So how do we sort of like unravel when the fear is about us not being, you know, being found out, not being what we think we are or other people think we are?
Yeah. I'll give you a quick answer now, but then we'll take the next three sessions to really learn it. The quick answer is to make friends with the part of yourself that is scared of being seen as an imposter. So there are different ways, and we'll learn a technique. We'll learn cognitive technique as well as a somatic technique on how to do that. But the answer is to actually lean in to that fear. Lean in to that part of herself that is scared of being seen that way. Understand it more, make better friends with it. And through the process that I'm gonna teach, when we get there, when we do this somatically, when we can hold space and be with and lean into the part that feels scared, one of the things that we're doing in that process is creating resiliency and regulation with that part. so that our system and the container of our bodies and our nervous system can actually sit right next to the fear, be with the fear, and feel more regulated with it. And that's when we can then make better decisions, even with it there.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Barbara.
I'm just finding this also very interesting, and the conversation that in the chat about anxiety versus fear. And I'm thinking back to a childhood experience that I had. I was anxious in school a lot. And I remember I had this one dress that had really long lapels, and I would suck on the lapel because I didn't suck my thumb in school, but I did when I wasn't in school. So I was anxious, but I also was lead in the school play in second grade and had all the kids' lines memorized and told them what to, you know, I would tell them if they didn't remember, you know, what their lines were because they were so afraid. So it's this very interesting thing because I know like public speaking is like a very high fear for a lot of people. I mean, probably most people. And it just never just seemed that big of a deal to me. And not like, you know, if I'm on a stage, of course I get anxious, but it's not that, you know, public speaking is often more of a fear for people than death, right? You know, so it's not that high for me. So this is a very interesting thing to kind of reflect on my anxiety, because I can definitely churn up kind of high and still not be like afraid. And yeah. And then we were, you know, in the chat, we're talking about how there can be that feedback loop of anxiety leading to fear or fear, you know, and which way does it go? And so it's really interesting to see it also having these two separate experiences that, so I feel like my fears are a bit more unique, you know, in like the imposter syndrome that's super common. I'm like, no, this is just me, you know. So it's just very interesting to like notice these differences, and that, I don't know, I feel like since that's not an issue for me, it's easy for me to hold space for people around that, because it's just like, yeah, I can see you as who you are, you know, and I don't see you being fake. You're you, you know. I don't know. It's really interesting to experience this. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I love what you're sharing. And I don't know if this is exactly what you're sharing, but one of the kind of thoughts that sparked for me as you were just speaking, which feels important to just share for everybody, is that we can also be high achieving and have the fear at the same time too. Like for some of us, the fear stops us in our tracks. For other of us, the fear of not accomplishing it may be bigger than the fear of the thing. So we're get it done people or high achievers, but there's the fear is still in play inside of us. Yeah. Marianne.
I noticed the thing that came to mind when we were talking in the chat here about like societal pressures and fear being something that's kind of vulnerable that we don't want to admit. Like, so I hate driving over really tall bridges. I have a fear of heights and like huge overpasses, or especially skinny bridges that don't have much of an edge. And I used to describe it to people. I'd say like, I have an irrational fear of heights. And then I had an experience that somehow just flipped the switch for me. And I was like, to the point of like your lizard brain, like fear has a purpose. It's totally rational to be afraid of heights. It's totally rational to be 500 feet up on a tiny little bridge going over a canyon or whatever. It's completely rational. And so that really helped me just put a stake in the ground and claim it. Like, I'm okay not being okay with that. Yeah. And sometimes if I'm like road tripping with a friend or something, I know that like my parameters, like I'm more comfortable if I'm the one driving, you know, and there's certain places that I just avoid, not places I would frequent anyway. But it did help to like take the stuffing out of it a little bit. I still have the fear. Now I don't have to feel like I have shame around it or anything. And I think a lot of that, you know, there's a lot of that. Like, why are we hiding things that really are just super rational?
Yes.
Fears. Come on. You know, there's a lot going on in the world today that's, you know, deserves a little fear. Not that we should let it drive the bus necessarily, you know, but I mean, there's something about claiming it and seeing how it serves you.
Yes, completely. And what you're speaking to, you'll see, is it's part of the process. So when we work, when we befriend the fear, the end point, the result, as we'll see, is not to support our client necessarily to take a different action. That might be a result that comes from the befriending process, but the real ultimate result is to create this different kind of relationship and understanding, like the one that you're talking about, so that then the client can make a conscious and empowered decision about what they want to do next. And that decision can be, yes, I want to cross the bridge. Or that decision can be, you know what, I don't want to cross the bridge, but I feel good and empowered about that decision. That is not a risk that I am willing to take. And in the end, crossing the bridge or doesn't cross, not crossing the bridge, that's not what's, what matters. It's the how we make the decision and the energy with which we make it. And like you're saying, not feeling the shame, but feeling the empowerment in it.
Yeah. And the other thing that's striking me as you're saying that, making that empowered decision to maybe not cross the bridge and go another way, it kind of goes flying in the face of the destroy your, conquer your fear, all that, because all those things take the choice out of it and make the assumption that either you're wrong to be afraid, you have to feel the fear and do it anyway, which, and sometimes that is the right choice, right? But it's that the pushing through takes that element out. It takes the empowerment out. It's like, you have to do this and you have to feel small about it, or you have to, you know, feel unsafe.
Yes. And you're not good enough unless you take the actions.
Right. Like, you're wrong if you don't do it.
Good enough, or you're, I see it a lot in business coaching, like, you're being that CEO is if you do it. But that, like you're saying, that takes away so many other options and agency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay, good. Let's keep on going. So next concept that's important, I think, for us to understand when we're working with fear, there's always something to risk. There's always something to risk. When we create goals for ourselves, or when we desire to step into a new place for ourselves, a different habit, or whatever it is, there's always something that is at risk. To change status, to move from one place to a next, to another, there is always some relationship or held belief or value or actual object or idea about yourself that is at risk. You can think of it kind of like if you're at the edge of a cliff and you want to get to the, there's a chasm and you want to get to the other side, you have to risk being where you are now in order to get to where you're going. And you have to take that risk of it. We're not going to like fall and die, right? But of, I may not get there. So, for example, if you want to grow your business, there a multiple of things that might be at risk for you. Maybe your current schedule is at risk for you. Maybe your identity as someone who doesn't have a bigger business is at risk for you. Maybe the type of relationship that you have with a partner or with your children feel at risk for you. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not going to get to have the same schedule. You might, or it doesn't necessarily mean that your relationship with your children is going to change. It might stay exactly the same. But the fear coming up is the feeling of something or more than one thing is at risk. Does that make sense? Okay. So with this understanding, one cognitive way to approach fear is through risk assessment, supporting clients to create awareness around the risk, asking a question like, what is the actual risk of taking this action? On a scale of 1 to 10, how big does that risk feel? And also to explore, is this a risk that they feel is worth taking? You now with this new awareness, is this a risk that they feel is worth taking? You could use a stretch, risk or die type of exercise. Just this kind of creating awareness or doing this kind of risk assessment brings the fear from this like kind of blobby, like I feel the fear, I don't know what it is, to okay, let's actually get clear on what is the thing that we're scared of letting go of or risking here? What is the probability that that will actually change, et cetera, et cetera? Let me pause there. Any thoughts on this piece? There's always something to risk. Barbara.
So I guess I have a question about this in terms of, like, I was just thinking about risk before you started to talk about it. And sometimes I perceive other people's fears as like irrational risks. And so, you know, like they, you know, getting up on stage, everybody will see me and then they'll hate me because I forgot what I was going to say or whatever it is, you know, I'm just making something up. But, you know, how do you help? So like, is that where you start to navigate? Are these rational risk, you know, is your risk assessment rational here, or is it, you know, are you, I don't know, like you laying more of your fear out there and just like, you know, just making this big barrier with it without, you know, like saying, oh yeah, that's not going to happen. So I don't know, just kind of was like, it just seems like a lot of fears that people express, there's a certain amount of irrational risk that they perceive. So, yes, I'll be back.
Yeah. So a couple things on that. So first of all, the more that we can kind of be with them in it, look at it, befriend it, and a lot of times use the somatic process to just kind of be and get more comfortable with it, it can help with that. But even what I was just saying, like on the cognitive level, sometimes it helps for just mental understanding of like, okay, let's lay this out. So what's at risk for you if you were to get on the stage and speak? What is the relationship, value, part of your identity, you know, etc.? Okay, well, people will hate me, right? Like, I'm just using what you just said. So the risk is having people like you. Right. Okay. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's the likelihood that that will actually happen? Or first, you could take it a step further. So if these people in the audience will hate you, then what does that mean? Well, I'll be all alone. Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 10, if you get on that stage, how likely is it that you're gonna end up all alone in life, right? So sometimes just like the, just that cognitive awareness before we get to somatic or anything else, it can help put it in perspective for the client. It can be, I think someone mentioned in the chat, I saw through the corner of my eye at some point, humor. It can almost like be humor. So, okay, well, I'm not going to be alone, right? So it can kind of start to poke those holes. And then you could even, as I was saying from there, say, okay, so what is the stretch when it comes to public speaking? What is the risk? And what is the die? And the die is like, I would never, ever do that. But the stretch is speaking in front of 10 people at a book club meeting. The risk is going and, you know, trying to get these taught, right? And then they can decide based on, okay, stretch, risk, or die. But so you're giving kind of this cognitive awareness versus it just being in the blind spot of this big blob of discomfort and fear. Is that helpful to think about it in that way? Good. Tina's saying in the chat, I believe what seems irrational is very real to the person experiencing the fear. Yes. Anything else that wants to be said or shared around this piece of there's always something at risk? Okay, so then that leads us to the next concept, which I think we also all know, but it's important to be reminded. Our egos like to be comfortable. Our egos like to be comfortable. So there is a part of ourselves, or a big part of ourselves, that would rather be in the comfort versus be in the stretch or the risk. Now, if it's true that there's always something to risk, and if we want to get to a new place, we have to, in some way or another, give up the place that we are right now, it means inevitably there is going to be some discomfort in that growth or change process. And the ego is going to fight against that like crazy. Even when the comfort is not a place, like a likable place, even if you so dislike your current career or your current situation, whatever it is, the ego is gonna trump comfort over dislike much of the time. It's pretty amazing, actually. But you kind of can't have both, right? It's kind of like if you're sitting on the couch and you're thinking, oh, I really want something from the refrigerator, but I'm really comfortable on the couch, but I'm hungry right now, but I'm really comfortable on the couch. At a certain point, you're gonna have to either choose the comfort or to actually get up, not be so comfort, right, like that, and get to the refrigerator to get the thing that you actually want. So your ego wants to stay in the safety zone because the safety zone may not be what feels great, but at least you know what it is. At least you know, at least you're familiar with it. You're settled in there. You know what to expect. But let's kind of look at this a little bit more deeply for a moment. The belief that we can do anything in life to remain fully safe and secure is kind of a lie that we tell ourselves. The belief that we can do anything in life in order to remain fully safe and secure is kind of a lie that we tell ourselves. Because the truth is that life is always changing. And there is always the possibility that we might lose our home, or get hurt, or the business will fall apart, or the relationship may not work out. Whatever it is, that is life. There is no guarantee of security. In order to be alive, we're always moving and changing and growing. Yes, we can root down like the trees. We can find our connection and our groundedness. But that being said, we're still also always in the mystery. There's no guarantee of what comes next. Not about health, not about anything. There are no guarantees. And that's part of the beauty and the risk of being alive. Anything can happen, which is so amazing and also so scary. So I like to think about the cycle of risk or change or safety and security in terms of the cycles of the earth, because I think of so much in terms of the cycles of the earth. And I like to think about the trees in the autumn and how in the autumn the trees have these beautiful, colorful leaves. But in order to, for the next birth, in order for the spring, for the tree to grow again in the spring, at some point in the autumn, the tree has to be willing to risk that safety, that security, that comfort of the beautiful leaves in order to do what it needs to do through the winter and then get to the next place in the spring. All right, I know that's many big thoughts in what I just shared. I'd love to hear what's landing or what's sparking for you in what I just shared. The ego wants to stay comfortable and safe, but there's no, actually in real life, there's no guarantee. Tina.
I'm just resonating with everything you're saying today, Joanna. Just, I have had so much experience of there's no guarantee, and with the best of intentions and following all the rules, and it didn't matter. There was just no guarantee of all the horrible things that could happen anyway. And, you know, it's almost like for so many years when I owned a spa and yoga studio, you know, like I said, I followed all the rules. I had all good intentions for my clients, for the employees, everybody. But then life happens, you know, things happen that you have no control over. But there's still always a gift within that. And I found my gifts within that. And it's usually the work that has to happen within, but it's true. And it's very easy after even experiencing very traumatic things that happened to want to hide. And I still, you know, want to hide sometimes. And it's harder to go into that transition sometimes for me to that next higher level because of what's at risk. Yeah. And, but there's always something at risk, whether I could stay stagnant, and that's a risk too. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Annalise.
I think I had, I mean, there was a sentence that rationally I knew very well, that is, if you don't change, change will be, you know, occurring upon you. And I always rationally knew that. But now, you know, when you were talking, it just hit me physically. If, you know, nothing is certain in life and something is going to happen. So what you risk by not facing the fear is going to happen in a direction, it's going to make you worse than if you do face the fear. Because when you face the fear, you're going towards what you want. Whereas if you just stay where you are, something is going to change because you're going to lose your comfort, but in a direction where you don't want. And that has hit me massively, personally, and for my client as well.
Yeah, beautiful. It's so true. And I love that quote. And, you know, one of the reasons why we're looking at this is because I think sometimes on an energetic level, as practitioners, we want to keep our clients safe, right? So it's like we want them to stay safe. And so we might also be buying into some of these ideas that there's some way to just always stay safe. Now, again, we assess the situation, we befriend the fear, we create a different relationship with it, and then the outcome might be a very empowered decision, like we were saying with Marianne, to not cross the bridge. Like, not take that risk, to stay safe in this way. Like, that does make sense, but then it's empowered. But we don't want to unwittingly, energetically approach situations or join with our clients in this idea that there's some way to always stay safe. Thank you. Who else? Kelly.
I'm loving this so much, as many are saying in the chat. And I also feel like I am walking this so much right now personally. And last week, I thought I courageously and effortlessly said, well, I'm making this cross-country move and I'm ready. And then the day later, I got some more information that was just going to make it a lot more than I thought financially and some other pieces. And a lot is coming, like this decision has been a long time in coming, but now it needs to happen in a month because I need to get there in time for my kid to be in school. So I had this moment of saying, like, oh my God, I just told all these people in the sacred depths that I'm moving and this is a really bad idea. And and there is like one piece of information I'm still waiting on, but we're like 99.9% sure we have a place to arrive to. And anyway, I just did all of this soul searching and I feel like I have been walking through all these different pieces and really looking at, if I don't do this, then I'm staying in the place that I've been. And that doesn't mean it's better than like the hardship that's going to be that could be the next month of getting ready and making this happen. And I really want to be there, not here. And it's going to be hard. And I'm just, but the thought of like, staying in a place that I've been 1 foot in, 1 foot out for years, like, just didn't make sense anymore. And it's been, yeah, it's just been looking at so many of these pieces. And now I'm like in this place of, yeah, we're going to do this. It's completely nuts. We're going to do this. But it's definitely, I just feel like I'm walking with it so much and it is making me work my courage. And it's also helping me so much to be able to speak from a place of authenticity with my clients who are coming in with their own concerns and fears and what have you. So, yeah.
So it just feels good. So much to what you just said. And one of the many pieces that I'm hearing and what you just shared, Kelly, is that in a way you've done that risk assessment and you have made a conscious decision that you're willing to go through the discomfort of the next month, that it's worth that risk to get to the other side. It would be just as valiant if you would make the other decision, right? But so long, like you're saying, like you've sat with it, you're looking at it, you're being with it, and this is the empowered decision. You're clear on what you're risking, and you're clear that you're willing to sit through that discomfort. Beautiful. Thank you, Vlada.
I wanted to acknowledge how well the comparison with the tree changing leaves sets with me. I think I've been in the fear of being seen in the naked state without leaves after experiencing this great period of feeling so beautiful in my colorful attire with the leaves. And I was like, wow, but it's inevitable. And the cycle of life is inevitable too. These leaves will fall. Yeah. You want it or not, they will fall.
Right. We get to decide if they go gracefully or if they like cling off, and then they fall away in a harsher way.
Myself.
Right? Yeah.
But yeah, the feeling of feeling naked and being seen in that nakedness after you've achieved a certain level of success, and now you have to reveal yourself as a baby, so to speak.
Yeah.
Huge challenge.
Yeah.
Not even sure which fear is that. Probably a conglomerate.
Well, in a minute, several. We're going to actually look at some of the most common fears. So there might be one or a number there.
Yes.
And what I would just say as a like reflection for you to kind of, if I'll just toss this and if it lands for you to think about, is beware of black and white thinking. Beware of black and white thinking in this.
Yes.
And actually, you know, like the paradox, like there's new and then there's so much resource and experience that you're bringing through. So
that is true. Actually, it came to mind just as I was saying this, because I imagined the next cycle of life. I imagined spring, and in fact one of my favorite times of year, and visually something that always fascinated me is the buds of the new leaves just ready to burst open. And to me, they always look like, I even wrote a poem about it, that they look like the nipples of a woman that is aroused with desire, ready to be ravished. And it's just, yeah, there is a reason, I guess. I love this time, and it's a great time in the creative process as well.
Yes, I love that analogy. And as a reminder for everybody, we looked at this way back earlier in Sacred Depths, but that bud that Vlada is talking about, that new life, that could not grow there if there was already the old flower that hadn't fallen off, or the old leaf that hadn't fallen off. There wouldn't be room in space for it.
Absolutely. And people love nakedness for a reason, I guess.
Yes, it's so true.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so last thing for today is I want to briefly go through, this is not an exhaustive list at all, but I want to go through some of the most common fears that I see come up for folks, just because I think it's always helpful as a practitioner to have as much understanding about human nature and human reactions as possible. It kind of can help us spot things as we're listening to clients and create awareness. So again, this is not a list of all fears at all, but these are some that I like to share because they tend to be more common. And it's good to look for, it can be really helpful to look for them. None of them will come as great. Well, maybe a couple will come as a great surprise to you, but most probably not. So first one, fear of failure, right? And that can sound something like, I'm simply not gonna be able to make this happen, I'm gonna fail, etc. Like just fear of failing at what they're gonna do. Here's the thing that I always like to point out to practitioners about the fear of failure. Almost always, the fear of failing at one task, like I'm going to fail at this launch, I'm going to do the online dating and it's not going to work. Almost always for individuals, the fear of failing at one task without them even realizing gets conflated with the fear of failure of being a human being. Like the whole thing is a big fail. It's like, whatever happens in this one scenario is gonna foretell the whole future, like the whole value and worth of me as a human being and the whole future. Another fear that is pretty common, we've already heard it today, is the fear of not being good enough, right? It can sound something like not smart enough, not savvy enough, not a good enough coach, really just the fear around anything not being good enough. I have yet to meet a person that doesn't have this fear in one way or another. Another common fear is the fear of success. So fear of failure, pretty obvious. But for some folks, and some can have both at the same time, fear of success. So check this one out for yourself. Do you have any preconceived negative notions of what it means to be successful? Are there judgments around what kind of person a successful person is or what they have to do to get there? If some of that is rotating, you know, around, there might be a fear of success for a client. Fear of being seen or fear of being visible. You know, if I'm more seen, I'll get criticized. I'll be more open to criticism. I'm gonna have to stand up for my values or, you know, for this thing that I just said. The fear of being seen and being visible sometimes can related to who do you think you are, can be related to the fear of not good enough also. Here's another fear that can sometimes be underlying for folks. The fear of losing connection with self or loved ones. This is one of them that may not be obvious right away. But for example, oftentimes there can be a fear that if you achieve what you want to achieve or take the time to achieve what you want to achieve, that you'll become so busy or get so carried away or get so lost in the work that you won't stay connected to others. Or you won't stay connected to yourself. Another kind of version of this, I see this a lot with people that have a lot of artist archetype in them. If I make it big, then I'm gonna lose connection with my values. I'm gonna lose connection with myself and my identity and what I really know. I'm gonna become that kind of person. That's not me. Another one that can sometimes come up. And Ayana's saying in the chat, sometimes it's a very real thing that a person's family or community will cut them off emotionally. And I go back to there's always something to risk. So I'm not saying any of these fears won't come to pass. Again, we want to get clear, do risk assessment, see what, become better friends with it, and then make more empowered choices. Fear of not deserving what you want. For some folks, what can sometimes rise to the surface as you start to look more deeply is that they feel like they just don't deserve to have a great relationship or to get a book published or to live in their dream home. And then, of course, there are fears of others getting angry at you, fears of not being liked. That one's a biggie for me that I continuously work through. Fear of getting hurt. One that I didn't see in my first years, but as I've worked more and more with practitioners, another one that I see sometimes is fear of hurting others. And then similar to the fear of losing connection with others, but a little bit different. Another one that I often spot is fear of surpassing loved ones. So this fear revolves around a parent or a parental figure or a sibling, a friend, a mentor, an employer who you might feel incredibly loyal to. And there's a part of you that fears if you achieve what you really want, you're kind of going to break the code, like you'll surpass them or break the family code, or the rule between the two of you of how you relate. So instead you hold yourself back. You don't allow yourself to achieve the thing because that's more comfortable than the pain of surpassing this loved one and what goes along with it. All right. You'll get a sheet. I know I went through those quickly. You'll get a sheet with all of those and a couple more. We've got just a couple minutes left, and this is all to be continued. Again, today was just kind of the backdrop of foundational pieces. We're going to move into techniques over our next two sessions. But for today, I'd love for you to take a moment and write down, what is it that you're taking from our time together today? What's a big takeaway? I know there's a lot that came through, but for you, like, what's really your biggest takeaway from our time today? And I'd love for one or two of you to have the last word for today on that. Who'd like to share? What are you taking away? Marianne.
I think there's so many good things that came out of this discussion today, but I think the broader thing.
Oh, we
thing
just
is I just had this list of my notes.
Marianne, we're kind of losing you. I think you're growing.
Contrast between kind of the old ways and near me. I know my connection's a little.
Yeah, can you say that again?
Yeah, just the overarching theme of like the old ways or like the societal ways that we typically are conditioned to like address fears, like avoid them, hide them, be in shame, pushing through, powering through all that masculine kind of patriarchal energy and the contraction around fear versus breathe into it, lean into it. What is it telling you? Like the peaceful approach, a more feminine way of like receive some information, you know, receive a growth opportunity, and just like a massive reframe about the entire scenario. I think as a conversation went forward, I was continually able to put things in my, like, each category of, like, old way and the new way. And it's really kind of a powerful ongoing thread for me. So thanks. And thanks, everyone. What a lovely, lovely discussion.
Beautiful. Thank you. I love all of these takeaways in the chat as well. I'm going to hang on and read them. We are done for today. We're not going to meet next week, pretty sure. We're going to meet in 2 weeks and we'll get into the process and the techniques. So I'll turn off the recording. I'll hang on if anybody has